you know, nothing comes easy in life, but it can be worth it. Like working hard towards a goal that you've set for yourself can be very fulfilling.
What's going on, everyone? Emily Abadi here. You are listening to episode 298 of Hurdle, a wellness-focused podcast where I talk to inspirational people about everything from their highest highs and toughest moments to essential tips on how to live a healthier, happier, more motivated life. We all go through our fair share of hurdles. My goal through these discussions is to empower you to better navigate yours and move with intention so that you can stride towards your own big potential. And of course, have some fun along the way. For today's episode, I am chatting with the ever lovely Dominique Scott. She is a pro runner with Adidas, and she, like many, are towing the line up in Boston today on Marathon Monday. This episode going live on April 15th, 2024. Dom and I get into so much goodness in this episode today, including, not so surprisingly, what it was like training for her first ever Boston. The South Africa native moved to this country to run at the University of Arkansas, where she was a 5-time NCAA champion, 12-time All-American, and 10-time SEC champion. Not all that long after graduating, she moved to Boulder with her husband, and now she's training with Team Boss, which, as many of you know, includes some amazing stellar women like Emma Coburn, Corey McGee, Aisha Prout-Lear, Emma Bates, and so many more. Dom offers up so many of her best tips in today's episode: how to get out of your comfort zone, how to pursue your passions when the road to your passions is loaded with hurdles, and what's exciting her right now. I know I'm excited to watch her do her thing today in Boston. And on that note, a big part of what I admire and love about Dom is that she is really doing something different right now. She was excelling for a long, long time on the track, and not all that long ago, took to the roads. Boston is only her third ever marathon, and I love to see an athlete trying something new and chasing her big potential even after going to the Olympics twice on behalf of her home country, South Africa. Make sure, if you're not yet following along with Hurdle, you do so over on social. It's at Hurdle Podcast. I am at Emily Abadi. And subscribe to the weekly Hurdle newsletter while you're clicking, tapping, doing all the things. In there, you get a lot of the same motivation and inspiration you love about the show absolutely free in your inbox every single Friday. Last little note, if you are in Boston, don't forget that the Bandit Running Pop-Up, their sponsor of the show, is open at 119 Newberry today and tomorrow. Monday's hours are 1 to 5 p.m. and Tuesday is 10 to 5 p.m. Snag a post-race portrait if you ran, and otherwise, join me over there for some good vibes. And with that, let's get to it. Let's get to hurdling. Today, I'm sitting down with Dominique Scott. She's a pro runner for Adidas. She's also an Olympian, 2-timer. How are we doing today, Dom?
Hi, Emily. I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for making the time to go on the show. You obviously have nothing going on right now as you gear up for your third ever marathon, the Boston Marathon. We're recording this just shy of 2 weeks out. How are you feeling? Give us the lowdown.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm obviously nervous. Boston is not only 26.2 miles, but it also obviously has the monster hills in it. And, you know, people have told me how hard it is. So I'm pretty nervous, but I'm also confident in my training that I've put in the past couple months. So I'm kind of feeling like the work is in the barn, and now I just got to try and bubble wrap myself and keep myself healthy for the next 2 weeks and then run as hard as I can.
Yeah, run as hard as you can. It's interesting, right? You get to this point where you have all of these inevitable and understandable nerves, but you do have to trust in the training. What is it that helps you get to that point, that helps you calm the nerves and focus on the fact that you have done so much work up until this point?
Yeah, honestly, that's an interesting question. It's a good question. For me now, I am 31 years old and I've been running professionally for Adidas for I think it's like 8 years now. And then before that, obviously ran in college and high school. And I'm just trying to tell myself that I've put in a lot of miles in my legs and my feet over the past, you know, decade or two. And, you know, just I've showed up for practice and given my all of those years, and all of that work has to kind of result to something. So just, yeah, I'm not really answering your question, but you just got to kind of have faith that you've done the best that you could, you know, with what you were given.
Definitely. And it doesn't help that you've got some stellar teammates to train with. Talk to us a little bit about your decision to get on the good team with Team Boss.
Yeah. You know, Joe Bossard has actually been coaching me for 6 years. I was one of the first girls to join the group. And at the time, I was still training with my college coach, Lance Harder, back in Arkansas. And I just knew I needed a change, that I couldn't keep training in college-like environment settings and trying to compete against the best athletes in the world. So I knew I needed a change, and Joe reached out to me and was, you know, willing and wanting to help me and try to make me the best runner I could be. So he started coaching me in 2018. And then the team has just changed so much since then. And yeah, we've been really lucky to have both Emma Bates and Scott Fabel join our team since then. And, you know, they're both very experienced, very good marathoners. And last year, they both had a lot of success in Boston. So actually, right before you and I jumped on this call, I was texting with Scott Fabel, asking him some timeline questions for a Boston morning. We have to get on a bus pretty early and bus out to the start. So I was just asking him some logistics questions. So I do feel very lucky, very blessed that I have such amazing athletes to train with, to ask questions, to learn from, especially with starting the marathon. That is, it's not just like another event in track and field. It honestly feels like a whole new sport. There's so much to learn, so much experience to be gained, so much trial and error with training, with fueling, pre-race fueling, in-race fueling. So yeah, very lucky to have Emma and Scott to learn from.
What was the root of your decision to pivot into the marathon?
I think it's been a long time coming, to be honest. I've always been pretty good at long runs in college. Our long runs were kind of roll out of bed on a Saturday morning and do a long run. And the long run was probably only up to 12 or 13 miles, but they always came really easily for me. It was, you know, the one session of the week that I really wasn't worried about. I wasn't nervous. I could, like I said, roll out of bed and just go and run a 13-mile run at a pretty quick pace. And then when I moved out to Boulder and Joe started coaching me, obviously we're at altitude here. And even so, the long runs were something that I was pretty easily able to do. And Joe was pretty surprised by that. So we just kind of always had like the marathon in the back of our heads as an option for one day in the future. I will also throw out that my parents, both my mom and my dad, have run many ultra marathons. I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa, and the ultra marathon scene is really big there. They have the Comrades Marathon and the Two Oceans Marathon, both ultras, and my parents have run many of those. My mom did pretty well back in her day as well. So I guess I've had like, you know, knowing that like my parents had done what they've done, and then, you know, being like enjoying long runs and finding them not the most stressful workout of the week. I just always had in the back of my head that I feel like I need to try the marathon. And yeah, after the Tokyo Olympics, I started adding some half marathons to my racing schedules, and I really enjoyed those and enjoyed racing on the roads. So then last year, 2023, we kind of felt like it was the right time to start jumping into the marathon.
Yeah, wow. So much to unpack here. So first yeah. and foremost, the phrase, I felt like it wasn't that hard to roll out of bed and tackle a long run. So many people listening to this think to themselves, wow, I wish that I could feel that way ever. For those that would like to befriend longer miles, you know, whether for some, maybe that's starting at a 5K, building up to six, getting to that half marathon, marathon beyond, what would you say are some of the things that you do to make that process easier, to make the long run come the weekend work for you?
I mean, there are lots of little things you can do. I would say one is fueling the day before. You know, I think carbo loading kind of seems like such an outdated term, but making sure you're fueled before a long run really is very important. There's only so much fuel that you can have the morning before a run and while you're running, but the day before, if you're able to, you know, have three good meals, have some snacks during between those meals, you're going to be fueled a lot better and feeling a lot better on that run the next day. And then, yeah, making sure you have a good breakfast, making sure you have some fuel to take during the run, whether that's gels or some type of carb drink. I think that makes a huge difference. I can share that even the girls that train with Team Boss and are coached by Joe, even the girls that are not running the marathon right now, that still the track stars, they're even taking fuel during their long runs now because we've realized how important it is not only for during the run, but also for recovery post-run. If you're getting in carbs during the run, you're finishing your long run not nearly as depleted as if you hadn't. And so then they just recover a lot quicker. So yeah, so fueling is a huge thing, pre-fueling and during fueling. And then also pacing yourself correctly. I mean, if you start a long run too fast, it's going to be a very long day. So I always like to build into my long runs, start a little bit slower, let your body warm up, and kind of progress as you feel good.
Yeah, this is a great tip. Obviously, fueling super clutch. And I love to hear about that it's a conversation amongst all of you. It's indicative that not only you're looking out for one another, but also there's some accountability there. And then in turn, also showing up for one another to get these runs done, probably another really big piece to the puzzle when it comes to doing them successfully is having a buddy, an accountability partner to hit those miles with.
Yeah, period. For sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, to be honest, Emma Bates and myself haven't done actually any workouts together this build, but even knowing that we're both out on the roads at the same time, simultaneously, just doing workouts that we need to be better runners has helped. It's like, you know that someone else is out there suffering with you, even if they're not running next to you. And then I will say my team is so good about supporting each other in other ways. So often the girls will come drive by me and, you know, be honking and playing music for me because they've already finished their session, but my session's slightly longer. But yeah, having an accountability buddy is a huge help as well.
Are you a big sleep lady? Do you really focus on your sleep?
I do. I would say I'm pretty lucky. I'm a good sleeper. But yeah, sleep is so important. I mean, sleep, my coach has always preached, is the number one form of recovery. I'm not great at sleeping before races, and it's really hard these early morning marathons. You have to get up so early and you try to get to bed early, but then you're just like kind of tossing and turning and you're waiting for your alarm clock to go off. So I haven't quite nailed down the night before sleep routine. But on an average day, when I get to sleep in my own bed here in Boulder, I'm a pretty good sleeper. And yeah, definitely sleep is vital. It's key to performance for sure.
So when you say you're a good sleeper, define what good sleeper means to you.
I feel like it means like I'm getting into bed and like 20 minutes later, I'm asleep. I usually do have to get up a couple of times during the night to go to the bathroom, which like isn't the greatest thing, but I think it just means I'm really hydrated. And then I'm able to sleep until my alarm goes off. I just know that other girls, you know, maybe they have too much on their mind, so they're looking at their phones, and then they get into that weird cycle of, you know, you're looking at blue light and you're not able to fall asleep, and yeah, like stuff like that. But I'm a pretty solid sleeper. Like I'll pass out at night and sleep solidly and wake up feeling refreshed.
I have the same habits. I appreciate you. I would also like to think I'm a good sleeper. And there are a few things that have changed the game for me. One, blackout curtains, yes, without a doubt. Two, I don't keep my phone within reach of my bed. Like I have to get out of bed to get to my phone.
Yeah. That's really smart. Yeah, I have, I guess, like those things I don't even think about anymore. I have blackout curtains, and I guess it's a little bit dorky, but I sleep with an eye mask on, which is kind of funny sleeping next to my husband. but just like having, you know, no light coming in definitely helps. And I feel like once I put my eye mask on at night, it kind of almost like sets the tone of like, I'm going to bed now, like we're not doing anything else. And I also, there are like a few other things, like I don't allow myself to scroll at night. I really try not to go on social media, like once I decide that I'm going upstairs and going to bed, because I do feel like that can just, maybe not even like keeping you awake, but you can just waste so much time scrolling for like 30 minutes before you actually decide to put down your phone. So that's another one for me that seems to help.
Yeah, I also feel like in the scroll, it's not so much about the fact that it's wasting time. For me, it's about what might get triggered in my brain the act of scrolling, like seeing something that makes me feel some kind of way. It could literally be anything. And then I'm in my bed laying there and thinking about something for half hour, an hour, when otherwise I would have just peacefully drifted off to sleep. Why do that to myself? Why disturb my peace?
It's a very good point, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, the other thing that you talked about was growing up with two extremely successful athletes as parents. Tell me a little bit about what that taught you from a young age.
Yeah, well, my dad would be honored to hear you phrase it that way. My dad wasn't really a successful runner, but he did complete, like he's completed so many marathons and so many ultra marathons, which I guess is very impressive. I would say my parents taught me discipline. They taught me just like what good work ethic is. They showed me, you know, what it means to set goals and then work towards them. Like I feel like they silently showed me like so many valuable skills growing up. Like I really, you know, it wasn't like they were having to say anything or ask me to like watch them or anything, but just through their examples, I learned so much about how you can, you know, achieve success. I mean, my mom was a school teacher and she used to wake up early in the mornings, you know, like 4 a.m. or something, and go get her running done in the dark. By this time, my dad was really just running socially. So he would just get his runs in on the weekends with groups or after work in the evenings with local running groups. But my mom was still, you know, trying to be competitive. So she was getting her workouts done before going to school and doing a full day of teaching. And I mean, that's just so impressive. Like even thinking about that now as a 31-year-old, like I get to, you know, wake up at 7 a.m. and eat my breakfast and then go do my workouts in like perfect conditions around 9 a.m. and then come home and eat and nap and do my double. My mom was trying to do all of that with a full-time job. So yeah, they both definitely taught me that, you know, nothing comes easy in life, but you know, that it can be worth it. Like working hard towards a goal that you've set for yourself can be very fulfilling.
Yeah. And there's just so much research these days about the rate of which women drop out of sport and activity. And a lot of that is rooted in the fact that we as women are pressured to be either caretakers within the family or fulfill certain roles or look a certain way. And so to hear, you know, that at that time, it probably felt like she was making a sacrifice to be away from her family, to prioritize her own health and well-being, but still had the understanding that it was so good for her. And to then now you reflect on that time and say, she was really impressive to me. It was really impressive to see that she was able to make it all happen and to make that time for herself. I'm sure she'd love to hear that.
No, for sure. Yeah, it is crazy to think about. I mean, I feel like Yeah, with women in sport, you know, it's just not as flashy. It's not as cool. There's not as much money or support for females in sport. It is a hard choice to try and make it a career. And yeah, it's cool to see so many companies now backing, you know, women in sport and trying to keep the numbers up of females competing in sport.
Definitely. And so did you think when you came to the United States for college that you would take this beyond the collegiate level?
It was definitely a dream. Growing up in Cape Town, I would say the number one dream when I was like middle school, junior high age, I had the dream of earning a scholarship to come and run and study in the US. That was because my dad's brother and my uncle and his family had immigrated a few years prior to North Carolina for my uncle's job. And we had come to visit them, and I was like only 12 years old, but my uncle drove me around to universities in the area. We went to Duke and North Carolina State and Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And they showed me just like the amazing facilities that these universities had, nothing like what was offered in South Africa. And, you know, they told me like, if you become a top sports athlete, that you can get a scholarship to come over here. So that was my dream since I was like 12 years old. And then I would say the other dream was to represent South Africa at the Olympic Games. I didn't know really what professional running looked like. I knew about the Diamond Leagues, and I thought it would be really cool to compete at Diamond Leagues. But I never would have dreamed of running for Adidas for 8 years. Like that, this has just been beyond my wildest expectations. And I feel so lucky that I get to do what I love for a living.
Two questions. One, how was it for you emotionally to move so far away from your friends and family while also putting in all of these hours of work being an athlete on the collegiate level?
It was very hard. You know, I can barely remember it now, as such a long time ago, but there are a couple of stories that like stand out in my memory. One was I had actually already begun chatting to my now husband, Cameron. I'd met him on my recruiting trip to Arkansas, and him and I were chatting via Facebook. That was the platform back in the day. And 3 days before I was meant to get on the plane to fly to the States, I had all my bags packed and, you know, everything was like laying out in my bedroom. And, you know, this is the dream I'd had since I was 12. I was 18 at the time. And I decided there was no way I could go. There was no way I could get on this plane by myself, fly across the world to go to university where I knew almost no one except the people I'd met on my recruiting trip. And, you know, try make this happen. And I sent Cameron a message and I was like, no, I'm not coming. I can't do this. It's too scary. It's too big. And Cameron was distraught. He was so upset. I didn't know this, but he told me at a later date. But at the same time, I sat down with my mom in Cape Town and I told her, Mom, I can't go. Like, this is way too scary. I'm way too nervous. Like, everything I knew, I was like saying goodbye to go somewhere where, you know, I knew nothing. I didn't know how anything worked. I didn't know what the SEC was or regionals or, you know, everything was just going to be so new to me. And my mom said, she said, Dom, you owe it to yourself to give yourself, like, to take this opportunity. She was like, you worked so hard to earn the scholarship for like 5 years. You did it. You owe yourself this. So I got on the plane, really scared, very nervous. But what my mom said meant so much to me. And also thinking back to it, I know how hard it must have been for her to tell me that, because I'm sure she would have loved me just to go to university down the road in Cape Town and, you know, stay her little girl just a few minutes away. But she was so unselfish to encourage me to, you know, get on that plane and live out my dream.
What was it like when you told your now husband that you were going to get on the plane?
I don't really remember that, but I'm sure he was very relieved because he will tell the story that he had got his car detailed and it was like all clean and he'd put a new stereo into his car. So when I guess he was like busy like cleaning the car when I sent him this message. So he was like so upset and, you know, he felt like he'd cleaned this car and he was getting it all shiny for this girl that he was gonna, you know, meet for the second time. And so I'm sure he was just very relieved when I told him that I was going to be coming.
Taking a break from today's episode to give some love to the sponsors that make this all possible. First up, Element. Listen, healthy hydration isn't just about drinking water. It's about water and electrolytes. It makes sense. You lose both water and sodium when you sweat, which means that both need to be replaced to prevent things like muscle cramps, no thank you, headaches, and energy dips. But most people only replace the water, and that's because since the 1940s, we've been told to drink 8 glasses of water a day, whether you are thirsty or not. Well, drinking beyond thirst is a bad idea. It dilutes blood electrolyte levels, especially sodium levels, which leads to headaches, low energy, cramps, confusion, or worse. And that is where Element comes in, because the solution isn't to stop drinking water. It's to drink water plus electrolytes. Element has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it's got zero sugar, artificial colors, or other dodgy ingredients to hold you back. You'll find an Element flavor you love. My go-to is the watermelon salt, but they've got so many other fan favorites, citrus, raspberry, or you can even get a little spicy with their mango chili. Now, Element has an awesome deal for Hurdle listeners. Head on over to drinkelement.com. That's drinkelement.com/hurdle to get a free sample pack with your purchase today. Again, that's drinkelement.com, drinkelement.com/hurdle to get your sample pack today and gear up for the spring of speed the right way. Next up, gotta love all my friends at Hyper Ice that truly make my movement routine possible. Spring into action with the most advanced warm-up and recovery technology, including Hypervolt percussion massage, Normatec air compression technology. My boots are truly a lifesaver, and Venom heat and massage wearables. Let me tell you, I showed my friend the Venom Go the other day. It is a small heat and vibration wearable that you can put anywhere on your body. It is super discreet. I wear mine on the plane. She wore this adorable patch to a bar for the women's Final Four game and literally looked at me halfway through the game and was like, this is the best decision I've made all week. Truly, I cannot imagine my life without Hyper Ice products. And the best part is that you can get 15% off their entire suite on hyperice.com using the code HURDLE15 at checkout. Again, use code HURDLE15 at checkout at hyperice.com. That's HYPERICE.com to get my favorite products like Normatec boots, the Hypervolt 2 Pro, and the Venom Go today. And last but not least, I mentioned Bandit at the top of this. I'm going to do it again. Bandit has an epic spring collection out now. The colors are stunning. They've got a ribbed compression top and bottom that I am truly obsessed with. And not to mention a brand new perforated short fabric that has to be the lightest pair I own. Everything is truly incredible, and I am all about the deep cherry colorway. It reminds me of the perfect Hurdle maroon. But seriously, head on over to banditrunning.com, banditrunning.com, and use the code HURDLER15 for 15% off your first Bandit order, ASAP. When it comes to what happens in making that Olympic team, put us in your shoes. Talk to us about the process that went into making your first Olympic team.
The first team was honestly the easiest. I was actually still in college. I was a senior at the University of Arkansas, and I qualified in the 10,000. And I think my first 10K of the season at the Stanford invite, or the Peyton Jordan invite, one of the meets at Stanford. And yeah, I'd run about 20 seconds quicker than the standard. So then I made the decision to fly back to South Africa a few weeks later to run the South African Championships. I needed to be present at the championships and place top three in order to then be selected. So I did that. I guess the hardest part was that I missed like 10 days of schoolwork that I needed to catch up on. But of course, Coach Harder at the university was super supportive of it. And then I was able to just focus on my finishing out my NCAA season well. And then in August, went to Rio. So that was honestly the easiest team to make, just because everything was like pretty straightforward and I had the support of the university. It was the Tokyo Olympics, because of COVID, that was the tricky one. I qualified for the 5,000 the year before, and then I was still wanting to qualify for the 10,000, but I got a stress reaction coming into 2021, my first bone injury. But I knew that I really wanted to qualify for that 10K, so I didn't have too much time. The hard thing about the 10,000 meters on the track is we don't have many opportunities to race them. It's not like the 1500 or the 800 where you can find a pretty high caliber race every other weekend. The 10K, you know, there's really only one or two shots during the year. So I trained through my injury. I cross-trained through my injury, got myself healthy, and yeah, trained my butt off. And then in June, flew over to Europe and ran a 10K and was able to snag the qualifier there. And obviously, at some point, I'd gone to South Africa to run the championships. But yeah, it kind of feels like they've got harder to make every time. And whether that's been because World Athletics makes the qualifying times harder, or just, yeah, having something as crazy as COVID thrown in there. But yeah, the first one was the easiest.
Again, another Dom quote here. The team wasn't that hard to make. I love it. But you know what I think shows the humanity in all of this is you at the beginning of our conversation talking about how the marathon has been so challenging and kind of, in a way, different muscles for you to flex, right? So it's like you were really good at the 10K and are really good at the 10K. You're still running 10Ks, but really good at the 10K, and then decided, hey, I'm going to go out and try something new. And I think that that's really beautiful, right? It allows you to expand and learn and keep on learning as you continue to evolve, not just as an athlete, but as a woman.
Yeah, it's been cool. Yeah, I think at the beginning of the call, I was saying how humbling the experience has been transitioning to the marathon. Because like I said, my coach and, you know, a couple friends had really thought that I would kind of jump right in and be competitive off the bat. And I haven't run poorly. I just haven't run quite as quick yet as we thought I might. I ran 2:29.19 in London, which is obviously a fine debut. It was a very hard race, being a women's only race. So I ran the second half of the race totally solo, didn't see another runner. And then Chicago, I ran 2:27.30 when we thought once again that I'd run a bit quicker. So yeah, it's just been a humbling experience, but I do know that Adidas wants me on the roads, and I want to be on the roads too. And you know, the marathon is obviously the key event on the roads. It's also where the money is on the road, so it's definitely the most incentivized race.
Yeah,
but it's a hard, long day. Yeah, 2.5 hours, 26.2 miles. Like, that's no joke.
Oh man, a hard, long day. Again, another really great quote from Dom as I sit here, a, you know, average 4-hour marathoner.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that was something I thought after my first marathon. I was like, I don't care how fast or slow you run the marathon. If you have done a marathon, whether you walked or crawled across that finish line, I am in awe. I am so impressed, because The marathon is a brutal event. Like, you know, it is so long. So much can happen over 26.2 miles. So yeah, I'm a fan of anyone who's completed a marathon.
Anyone. Yeah. Trust me. I totally agree. I think no matter how long it takes you, the fact that you showed up at all says something, considering that less than 1% of the global population wants to do the same.
Yeah. And honestly, that less than, well, that other 99%, they're smart, because the marathon is crazy.
We're just lunatics. That's exactly what we are. Well, knowing also that being an Olympian was your goal, and you've done it twice now, after these trips to the Olympics, do you have those post-Olympics blues that people talk about? Have you had that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I definitely did. I think, I don't know if I like calling it the post-Olympic blues. I think it can be spun positively. It was a weird realization for me going to the Olympics, as I think I was 24-year-old in 2016, having come off the high of just graduating and signing a professional contract with Adidas. I think where it comes from is no one just goes to the Olympics. Everyone has such a long, hard journey with usually lots of sacrifices made to get there. And when you get to the Olympics, it's very special. It's very cool. But at the end of the day, it is just another race, or, you know, competition, depending on what sport you're in. It's not really going to change your world. You know, you're the same people are still going to love you. The same people are still going to support you. You might gain a few fans along the way, or a couple more sponsorships or something like that. But at the end of the day, it's just another race. And I think that can be viewed negatively, because you can get there, you can run the race and kind of realize, wow, that was not really life-changing like I thought it would be. Or you can go, you can race, and you can be like, cool, it's just another race. Like, there isn't, I shouldn't be putting extra pressure on myself. I shouldn't be building this event up to be something bigger than it is. At the end of the day, it's just another 10,000, 25 laps around the track, you know, against the best runners in the world.
Just another 25 laps around the track. I think also there is some humanity that comes to the event, and by viewing it the way that you just described, you have the opportunity to also in that moment come back to calm.
Exactly. You
know, the event within itself, of course, the Olympics is this awesome thing. There's a reason why so many individuals are excited to compete there, same for world championships or insert other big race here. But at the end of the day, by viewing it in this way, it helps you, the athlete, take back some of the control that might feel otherwise lost.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like it brings it down a little bit. It like doesn't put it on a pedestal as much anymore.
When you finish a big event, whether it is the Olympics or the Boston Marathon, are there certain things that you look forward to, maybe only if for a little while or whatever the case may be, get back into your routine or focus on before you really get back into the swing of heavy training?
Yeah, to be honest, post big races is weird. I think my husband, like, he doesn't even want to be around me after a big race, because it is, I kind of feel lost. You know, I really like being in a routine. I'm a homebody. I like, you know, being in my home, doing my training, coming home, eating well, napping. Like, I love the routine of being a professional distance athlete. So when I finished a big race and I have a week or two of no running, I feel weird. I'm sure a lot of other listeners feel the same way. It's like, I feel like, yeah, I feel like I'm not myself without running. But it obviously is also so important to have that time to reset, to allow your body to recover. And especially after the marathon, it's so needed. But I think that I'm not very good at it, but I try to do things that I wouldn't normally do during season. So like, I'll accompany my husband to the golf course and ride along in his cart as he plays 18 holes or something like that. Something where usually I'd be like, I need to be at home with my feet up. or, you know, whether it's going out to dinner and not looking at the time and allowing myself to stay out slightly later than normal, or usually after a big race, we'll fly back to Arkansas to visit Cameron's family, you know, something that I don't get to do while I'm in a heavy training block. So yeah, so there definitely are things that I do. Sometimes we schedule a vacation, usually like once a year, Cam and I try to go on vacation. That I obviously look forward to. But yeah, the feeling of like not having a purpose in my day, a purpose of training hard and trying to make myself a better runner, like that's not a feeling that I really enjoy.
Yeah, understandable. I think a lot of us kind of tiptoe on this line of so many different ways that we identify, right? So if you were to tell me that over the course of 3 weeks, a month, that I wouldn't be interviewing anyone or talking to anyone, I would feel a little bit shook, because this is something that I love to do. And it's a big part of how I identify. And as a journalist, as a podcaster, it's just a big part of my day to day. So I hear you on that for sure. Now, something I want to chat about a little bit would be the opportunity to form these relationships with the other women on Team Boss. I loved what you wrote over on your Instagram after Corey McGee got married, saying that you never would have expected to be at her wedding 10 years later after you guys were rivals in college. Talk to me a little bit about how it feels for you to have this supportive group of women in Boulder.
Yeah. Corey and I have known each other for a long time. Obviously, Florida and Arkansas are both very big SEC track teams. And she was, I think, a year or two ahead of me in school. So we overlapped for a few years, but not our full, like 4 or 5 years. But definitely when I was a freshman in Arkansas, I got taught that Corey McGee, Jen Lacaz, Mandy Perkins, who are her two very good friends and were two of her bridesmaids, they were the enemies, man. Like we wanted to beat them. So now training with Corey on a day-to-day basis and being friends with Mandy and Jen is definitely pretty funny. And I never in a million years would have thought that, yeah, I would be going to Corey McGee's wedding. So that's pretty funny. But yeah, I feel it's being a professional runner is such a gift. Like obviously I know that if you were to ask almost any college athlete, if they could, you know, if they wanted to go pro, if they had the opportunity to go pro, I know they would say yes. It is such a gift. But I think professional running or being a professional athlete is glamorized. I think, you know, it looks a lot prettier, a lot shinier than it actually is. It's a really hard job to be competing for your livelihood, for your work to be on display all the time. It's pretty hard. And to be able to go through the highs and lows with other like-minded athletes, I just feel very lucky. I think it would be so much harder, so much lonelier, and yeah, not enjoyable if I was doing this by myself. So yeah, I feel very lucky to have the girls on Team Boss to go through this journey with.
Talk to me a little bit about maybe the other side of the coin. Is it difficult at times to be doing the same events? Like I know you mentioned, obviously, Bates and you both towing the line in Boston. You haven't had the opportunity to train together. Is that an exciting thing for you? Is it motivating for you? Are there moments of competition and falling into the comparison trap? Where do you sit within that?
Yeah, I think Joe has done a pretty good job of, one, making sure we have athletes that, you know, aren't only competitors, but that they can also be good teammates and training partners. But I also think he's done a good job of making sure we don't have like 5 US 1500 meter runners all going for 3 spots, if that makes sense. You know, we have obviously Aisha represents Jamaica, I represent South Africa, the rest are American, but a lot of us represent different brands. So we're not really competing for our brand's dollars. We're also competing in a lot of different events. There obviously are times where we overlap with races. Like Emma Bates and I obviously both ran Chicago. We're both running Boston, and I've been on the track, you know, competing with some of the girls in the past. But for me, I've almost felt lucky that I have someone to warm up with. I have someone that I know has gone through the training with me. I've never really viewed it too much as a negative. You know, I think the girls that are competing for the US spots, it's a slightly different for them. But I think for the most part, everyone just sees it as an advantage. Like, we get to help each other be the best athletes we can be. And, you know, if Danny is helping Corey be the best runner she can be, Corey's also helping Danny. And then on the day, they just, you know, have to try and beat each other to make that team. But
do the best you can with what you have.
Yeah, exactly. I think we know, like, we're better off for it, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. Beyond the team, though, do you find that you ever fall into that comparison trap? Do you ever have difficulty with that?
Yeah, I can share that I have really tried to be off Instagram for the past almost 2 months now. I've just been going on Instagram to post my stuff, and then I get off there. Even though I really enjoy Instagram, I really enjoy making reels. I find it really fun, but I know that there's this whole other side that Instagram definitely affects, like, my mental psyche when I'm seeing athletes' results, I'm seeing their training, and then comparing myself to that and, you know, wondering if I'm training hard enough, if I'm fit enough, if I'm doing enough. And yeah, it can be hard because, like I said, we're all, you know, there's only so much marketing dollars that these brands have, and they have to choose where they're going to put it, whether it's, you know, you or someone else. And it's hard not to compare yourself to other athletes, for sure.
Who is Dom outside of being a runner?
Wow. That's a good question. I feel like I need someone else to answer that.
Yeah. That's so interesting that you said that.
Yeah, I feel like my husband or my sister would almost need to answer that, because one, I feel like I'm the runner, you know, so much of the time. And I would like to say that I'm a pretty positive, bubbly, fun person. I'm pretty girly. Like I said, I'm a homebody, so I definitely like being at home. I have a dog, Bailey. I adopted her when I was only a sophomore in college. So she's 11 years old now, and she's, you know, been in my life pretty much since I was in the US. So being around her is definitely important to me, and I love being around her. I know my teammates kind of sometimes tease me that I'm, like, so close to my husband, but my husband is definitely my best friend, and I love spending time with him. But yeah, I would say I'm like pretty much like a girly girl. I love rom-coms, reading rom-coms, watching rom-coms. that's kind of me. That's like, yeah. And I think, you know, I've been chasing running and all the running goals since, you know, I was like 12 years old. I've always been super sporty, so it's hard to take myself out of running or away from running. But yeah, I think, yeah, that's kind of me.
A woman that loves her dog and loves rom-coms. Yeah. You know, this question is coming then. If you had to give me, like, top 2 to 3 rom-coms, what are we going with?
Ooh. I like... Oh, I mean, honestly, I like anything, except for maybe like the super corny ones, because then sometimes I'm even like closing my eyes. But something like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, you know, that's like obviously such a good one. All the Nicholas Sparks ones, like I think it's called Your Choice or My Choice, something like that, or even The Notebook. You know, all those like just happy ending, good love stories. It's so typical, but you can guess what's going to happen in the end, but that's my type of movie.
I'm going to go and say that my top 3 are probably 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, that's a great one.
Pretty Woman.
Nice.
Might be Clueless.
Oh, that's fun.
Little mix up over here. A little mix up.
No, I like that. I'll have to think about mine. Maybe I'll like post them on my Instagram story or something. I think I'm gonna force
you to get back on social media, but I think I've been
posting and then I just get off. It's like I have obviously some ads that I need to do, or if I get really good workout content, I'll post it. But it's just, it's not going over on to social media, scrolling for 30 minutes and seeing what, you know, everyone else is doing in their training build for Boston Marathon. It's that type of thing.
Totally. So beyond what's going on right now, clearly we're in an Olympic year. How are you feeling about Paris?
This year is a little bit weird for me because I transitioned to the marathon last year. I don't actually have the A standard for Paris. I'm not sure if I'm going to get to go. I could go back to the 10K. I could go back to the track after Boston. I'm honestly just not sure if I want to. There's an A and a B standard for the marathon. The A standard is 2:26:50. The B standard is 2:29:30. So I got that B standard in my debut in London. Chicago, I thought I would run the A standard. I was about 40 seconds shy of it. However, you can still get in based off rankings. I thought my rankings would get me into the Olympics, so I chose to run Boston this spring. You know, you have to make these decisions months out. So I made this decision about November last year already. And since then, three South Africans have run the standard, and Boston is not a legal course where I can run, like get a faster time than my Chicago time. So right now I'm actually sitting out of the Olympics for the South African squad. Yeah. So I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what to think. Like I said, I could still try run another fast marathon. That's pretty unlikely after Boston. I think I'm, you know, just going to do Boston and put all my eggs into that basket. And then, yeah, like I said, I could also go back to the track, but my heart's kind of on the roads now. So yeah, I think I might just be focusing on the roads, and it might not lead me to Paris, but I also kind of feel like the world majors are such a big stage that, you know, if I have to miss Paris this time around, I've already got two Olympics in my bag, and I'll just go and run some world majors and get some experience and maybe some prize money.
I'm hearing a lot of growth here. It sounds, in the way that you speak about it, like you're very at peace with whatever happens next.
Yeah, it's been kind of a transformative year transitioning to the marathon. And I think just getting another year older, definitely my husband's helped a lot with it, because I obviously have had my moments of sadness about possibly not being at the Paris Olympics, and knowing that it was really because I decided to times my distance by 4 the year before the Olympics. And, you know, I think my progression in the marathon is still being fine. Like my coach Joe, I asked him after Chicago, should I just quit with the marathon? Like, should I just go back to the track? And he was like, Dom, you ran 2:27 in your second marathon ever, like at a world major. He was like, if we could get 2 minutes better every time we ran a marathon, like that would be amazing. I think it's just hard when I'm comparing myself against the best marathoners in the world, obviously. It then doesn't seem like, you know, 2:27 is that good. But I do have faith that there is still a lot of room for improvement in the marathon, and that I'm on the right path. And yeah, my husband likes to remind me, you've been to two Olympics, like is a third one really going to make that big of a difference, you know? and yeah, the marathon is just like a whole new ball game. And I've definitely felt very taken care of and looked after at these world majors, London and Chicago. And I know Boston will be no different. And to be honest, going to the Olympics, like there's a lot of stuff you got to do for yourself. Like a lot of times you're coming out of pocket for a lot of things, you know, maybe like your pre-camp, getting over to Paris, stuff like that. You're staying in a village, you're sleeping, you know, sharing a room, you're sleeping on a tiny little bed, or, you know, like Tokyo, a cardboard bed that isn't very comfortable. You're not able to eat the food you usually eat before races. You're, you know, eating in a cafeteria. So it's obviously an amazing experience representing your country and competing at the Olympics, the world's biggest stage, but it's not an easy place to perform well. And I think, you know, I've done it twice. If I had the opportunity to go to Paris, would I take it? Absolutely. But, you know, it maybe it's not the worst thing in the world to, you know, not be given that opportunity this year and, you know, rather go and run another fast marathon in the fall.
And all of the other opportunities you've never had that you're embarking on right now are here to teach you something else, to instill new lessons within you. And it's not to say that, who knows, maybe Dom has teammates to cheer on in Paris.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure I will. I definitely will have teammates. Team Boss teammates, Adidas teammates, South African teammates. I'll have lots of people to come cheer and get excited for. I also, every summer for the past decade, I've been competing and, you know, traveling around the world. It might be a nice change to, you know, have a little bit of a downtime this summer. I mean, all this being said, I would way rather be in Paris. But yeah, I think as I'm getting older, I'm just realizing that, I don't know, there's not only one way forwards, and the Olympics isn't everything. It's obviously very cool, but I do still feel in my gut like there are going to be some good races and good opportunities for me in the marathon, and Paris might just not be part of that story.
Yeah, I hear you. It's interesting though. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if come, gosh, May, June, we're seeing you trying to tackle some track workouts.
No, I wouldn't be surprised either. I'm sure it's at the back of Joe's mind. Yeah, if I could run, you know, anything close to what I did like a year ago, I would be fine and I could go to Paris in the 10K. It's just more, if I want to do that. And if Adidas wants me to do that too.
A little combo decision-making to be had. Right now, we've talked a little bit about social media. Someone goes to your Instagram page. They see this bubbly, happy woman, a professional runner for Adidas. You've got something like 60,000 followers over there. But when you look in the mirror, what is it that you see looking back at you, Dom?
Oh, honestly, it depends what day it is, which is sad, to be honest. Like, there are some days that I look in the mirror and I see a very hard worker and someone who has been dedicated to being the best runner they can be for, you know, a very long period of time. And then there are other days that I look in the mirror and, you know, I'm sad. I'm sad that, I don't know, that I'm not faster, that I'm not, you know, haven't run as many records as I would like. I think, you know, going back to what I said earlier, our job is hard, and we're always comparing ourselves and always, you know, looking at those time bonuses or the records that we haven't got yet and feeling like we're somewhat of a failure or not good enough. And yeah, so I feel like it kind of flip-flops, and it would be disingenuous to say that, you know, I look in the mirror and every day I see, you know, a positive, happy person.
Yeah. And that is so relatable. I always come back to this thought that vulnerability is relatable, perfection is not. And so to be projecting in such a certain way, not only if you're projecting that image of perfection, is that not serving you? But it's not really creating a pathway for anyone to have authentic and progressive conversations with you either.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's where social media can be tricky, because I don't want to be going on social media and posting the bad stuff, right? No one wants to see or hear that. Like, I could be sharing about how last week I got a toe blister and then it got infected and I had to go on antibiotics and then I got a cold from going to Corey's wedding and it was like a horrible week to have 3 weeks out from the Boston Marathon, but no one wants to hear about that, you know, so you don't post that, you don't share it, but then you're only sharing the highlights, and that's hard for people to digest too, because it's just not real life.
Yeah, I hear you. I think there's somewhat of a balance to be had, but finding that balance certainly takes time, and it's definitely, definitely different for everyone. Personally, I would love to hear about your toe blisters, Dom.
Oh my goodness. No, it wasn't very fun. It was so stupid. I couldn't believe, like I've said, I've been running for like 2 decades, and 3 weeks before the Boston Marathon, I get, you know, a blister infected. It was very silly and stupid. All that I would say is, everyone, keep your blisters very clean, and also don't run too hard on antibiotics, because that's not good for you either.
Elites, they're just like us. Well, as we wind down here, Dom, I want to hear, besides Boston, what are you excited about right now?
Well, I don't have any other races on the schedule as of right now. I would like to run another marathon in the fall, maybe another fast one. But what am I excited about? I don't know. I just feel like, even though it's like already April, I feel like there's so much time this year to just grow and become better people. And yeah, I that's a really good question, but I don't know. But I just feel optimistic that, you know, there's a lot of goodness that's going to happen in this next year. You know, I think for us track and field athletes, the Olympic year is always strange because most contracts come to an end at the end of an Olympic cycle. So yeah, there can just be a lot of change, whether it be, you know, that the road of being a professional athlete comes to an end, or, you know, your shoe company re-signs you or another shoe company signs you. But there's, I think it can be so daunting, but it can also feel kind of exciting that like a new chapter is around the corner. And I think that's kind of how it feels to me right now.
New chapter on deck. I love this. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you before I let you go today. There's two more questions. Yeah. The first question, if someone goes to your Instagram page right now, they see your cameo link. What's the wildest cameo you've ever been asked for?
Oh my goodness. Okay, well, this isn't a cameo, but immediately where my brain went, this is such a weird story. But I lived in, when I was still living in Northwest Arkansas, I'm pretty sure I was out of college, like first year out of college. And I went to this furniture store and I was just browsing for my husband and my home. And the lady working at the store, just like on the floor, she recognized me. In Arkansas is not a very big state, and the university gets like a lot of support because we don't have any pro teams in the state. So yeah, the Razorbacks are like very well supported. So this lady recognized me. And she was like, oh my goodness, my boyfriend is, she's older than me, right? She's not like college age. She's like, I'm probably, you know, 24, 25. She's, you know, at least mid 30s. And she's like, oh my goodness, my boyfriend, he's such a huge fan of yours. And I left my number because she was going to call me back about a piece of furniture. She ends up calling me like the next day. It's not about the furniture, but it's that it's her boyfriend's birthday that they're going out to Shogun. And she wanted to know if I would show up at Shogun in my Razorback uniform and bring cupcakes, which she leaves at the, which she's planning on leaving at the front desk of the restaurant at the host stand. And I come up to their table singing her boyfriend happy birthday.
Oh my God.
How weird. Obviously, I said no. I was like, I'm really sorry. And I made up some excuse that I was busy that night. But that's definitely the weirdest thing that I've ever been asked to do. Honestly, on Cameo, it's all pretty tame. It's usually, you know, someone has got a promotion, congratulating them. It's someone's birthday. Someone's running a race, like that type of stuff. And I find the cameos pretty fun. But yeah, that request was pretty wild.
That is absolutely wild. Wow, that's better than any wonky cameo request.
Yeah.
All right, Dom. Well, right now you have an opportunity to give your younger self a piece of advice. Let's go back to the Dom that was scared to make that big jump, moving over to the United States to go to college on a scholarship and run. Right now, knowing what you know, what advice would you tell yourself at that hurdle moment?
Ooh, this is going to be a deep one. So when I was a senior in high school, I was running well. Obviously, coaches in the US were starting to look at me, but I was wondering how I could get faster. So my dad found a nutritionist that I could speak to and, you know, give me some input. And the nutritionist, she was a nutritionist. She wasn't a registered dietitian, which now I know there's a big difference between. And she just gave me some very poor advice, and I lost a lot of body weight, but also strength. And my metabolism just got super duper slow. I also became anemic. And because of, I lost so much weight that I got picked up by a model agency, which at the time seemed pretty cool, but it was not cool in the long run. I got slower. I got weaker. And it took my metabolism probably 2 years to get back to what it was from just probably 6 months of almost starving myself, doing what I thought was correct, right? I was following her eating plans, but as a very type A athlete who, you know, wanted to be better, I was willing to do whatever that meant. So, you know, whether that meant following this eating plan and eating less carbs, that's what I was going to do. But it really backfired. And, you know, I learned the hard way that you can't mess with your metabolism. And there's no quick fix. There's no shortcuts to running faster. So yeah, if I could talk to my younger self, 18-year-old self, I would say, don't starve yourself. Listen to your body. Your body is very smart. It will tell you when you need fuel. If it's craving something, it's because it needs that. And yeah, be very careful about who you listen to with nutrition advice.
Wow. This is not the direction I thought it was going to go, but I appreciate you for sharing that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, it's a little deep. I haven't shared that one before, but yeah, definitely also like just watching some close friends that are struggling with red S, like it's nothing you want to mess with, especially as a female athlete. So yeah, definitely any young girls listening to this, be very careful who you listen to and get nutrition advice from.
Good tip. Well, I appreciate you so much for your time, Dom. I'm rooting for you, not just in Boston, but beyond. Thank you so much. For those that don't follow along with you just yet, give us your info. How do they keep up with you?
Yeah, for sure. Well, my Instagram is domscottrunsa, SA standing for South Africa. That's really the platform that I use the most. And then, yeah, you can just support me racing. Yeah, next race, Boston Marathon on the 15th, I think. Yeah. Monday, Patriots Day. And yeah, the support is always very much appreciated. You know, it's a wild world out there now where, you know, even social media followers makes a big difference to, you know, how much support you're getting from sponsors. So yeah, all of it means a lot.
Follow along. Yeah. I'm over at Hurdle Podcast and at Emily Abadi. Another hurdle conquered. Catch you guys next time.